Hello, and welcome to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. On today's show, we'll feature a truth track, an audio documentary which hopes to rock hard as it seeks to inform, educate, and inspire. This week's truth track is titled, Two Sides of Jails and Prisons. We'll also update you on things you can do across the Chicago area. But first, let's hear these news briefs courtesy of The New Standard. A Republican elector for West Virginia considers denying Bush his electoral vote. A report says that Americans kill more Iraqi civilians than insurgents do. Tobacco companies are accused of fraud in a lawsuit that could snuff them out. Disney is fined for a workplace death. And a man is barred from a library for browsing a gay news website. If George W. Bush wins the most votes in West Virginia this November, he might still not receive all of that state's electoral votes in December. Richard Robb, a Republican elector who would be mandated but not required to vote for his party's ticket if a majority of West Virginians vote for Bush and Dick Cheney, has said he may withhold such a vote in protest of Bush's policies. The reasons for disapproval cited by Robb, who has served as mayor of South Charleston for nearly 30 years and recently lost a primary bid for governor, include the decision to invade and occupy Iraq, as well as Bush administration fiscal policy. Robb told the New York Sun that he is also highly unlikely to vote for Senator Kerry if Bush wins. He will only be eligible to vote at all if Bush wins the West Virginia popular vote, but in an extremely close contest, one electoral vote could make a difference. If neither ticket receives 270 electoral votes, the House of Representatives would decide the outcome. In at least one possible scenario, an abstention by a single elector could send the election to Congress. Iraq's health ministry reports that, despite numerous high-profile terrorist attacks targeting Iraqi non-combatants, U.S. forces and Iraqi government troops have killed twice as many civilians as rebels and terrorists have killed. The study was obtained by Knight Ridder newspapers. In the period between April 5th and September 19th of this year, during which the U.S. military reports 432 American troops were killed, nearly 3,500 Iraqi civilians were confirmed to have died in fighting, two-thirds of them at the hands of U.S. forces. The actual number of Iraqi deaths is probably substantially higher, as many have gone unreported. The ministry also says 13,726 Iraqi civilians have been wounded in fighting, and at least 147 of the dead were children. After 5 years of preparation, a massive trial against the country's leading cigarette companies was scheduled to begin in September. It could strip the companies of $280 billion and put them out of business. At issue is whether the tobacco industry executives and public relations officials discussed how to deceive the public about the dangers of smoking during a 1953 meeting in Manhattan. Prosecutors allege that the meeting violated the Federal Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, and that the company's subsequent profits were therefore earned through fraud. The defendants include Philip Morris USA, its parent company, the Altria Group, the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, the Brown & Williamson Tobacco Corporation, the Lorillard Tobacco Company, British American Tobacco, and the Liggett Group. The companies deny the charges and cite the massive 1998 settlement concerning the health care costs of smoking and its nearly $250 billion payout as evidence that they have already complied with the basic reforms the government has requested. The Justice Department disagrees and, according to the New York Times, has aggressively pursued those charges despite several efforts by Congress to block financing for the case. According to Martin Feldman, a Merrill Lynch analyst interviewed by The Times, the combined net worth of the targeted companies is less than $200 billion, meaning that a $280 billion payout could easily put them out of business. The trial is expected to last at least 6 months. Walt Disney Entertainment received just $6,300 in fines after a worker was run over and killed by a float as it entered a parade. Javier Cruz, age 38, died after his right foot became caught in a parade float. He fell and was then run over. Though Disney spokeswoman Veronica Clemens had said that the safety and security of Disney guests and cast members is a top priority, the company had no barriers between floats and parade workers. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration categorized the citation as serious, but the maximum fine is $7,000 for willful one-time offenses. Had the agency determined that the death was part of a pattern or was willful, the maximum fine would have been only $70,000. The Walt Disney Company recently reported $604 million in earnings for the third quarter of 2004. A man who was kicked out of the Hawaii State Library for looking at a lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered website has filed a federal lawsuit to challenge a law that allows people to be kicked off public property. A security guard issued Carlos Hernandez a written warning on May 18, 2004, citing him for perusing a pornographic website. The site, Hernandez said, was www.gayhawaii.com, an informational site on events, real estate, and services for the gay community. After a written warning has been issued, the state law says the person cannot return to the area for up to 1 year. The law, which is aimed at squatters on campgrounds, beaches, and parks, has also been criticized by advocates for the homeless. These brief reports come to us courtesy of The New Standard. We encourage you to support independent, nonprofit, anti-commercial news sources like The New Standard on the web at newstandardnews.net. You're listening to The Ministry of Truth on WHPK Chicago, 88.5 FM, the pride of the South Side.
According to the major record labels, everyone who downloads a song off the internet is a thief. But there's a lot they aren't telling you. For example, did you know that when you buy a major label CD, virtually none of the money makes it to the musician? It's true. When you pay $15 for a CD, the artist royalty is about 75 cents. But most major label artists don't even get that. Musicians don't get any royalties until they pay back all of the costs of recording and promotion. That means they don't get anything until they sell at least 500,000 or a million CDs. Here's another way to look at it. For most CDs at the record store, none of the money goes to the musician. So when the major label CEOs tell you that sharing music is stealing from musicians, they're A, lying through their teeth, and B, hypocrites. The real thieves are the corporate record labels. And giving them your money just perpetuates a system where musicians get screwed and independent music gets locked out of the mainstream. The best part of all this, though, is that thanks to file sharing, the corporate record companies are dying off, while independent labels are thriving. Musicians, radio DJs, everybody, we finally have a chance to change the music business. Don't buy major label CDs. Support independent musicians. Take back music. DownhillBattle.org.
This is the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Strapinchik. On today's show, we'll feature a truth track, an audio documentary which hopes to rock hard as it seeks to inform, educate, and inspire. This week, the topic is Two Sides of Jails and Prisons. In this radio essay, I'll be talking about jails and prisons, including various facts about confinement situations that you might not know or expect. For example, some instances from the history of mathematics took place in prisons. The 18th century French mathematician Évariste Galois spent time in prison for his involvement in revolutionary politics, and is credited with outlining a solution to a then-vexing problem solved by what became Galois theory. It is quite likely that some of his mathematical work took place in prison. And that might make sense. Doing research mathematics requires long stretches of deep concentration with no interruption, the archetypal situation for someone in prison. One could say that the same thing is true with literature. One way to pass the time in jail would be to write, and examples of written works emerging from jails and prisons are plentiful. On April 16, 1963, Martin Luther King wrote his famous Letter from Birmingham Jail. The Italian political theorist Antonio Gramsci died in 1937 and was imprisoned for the last 11 years of his life, during which he invented, through his prison writings, much noted political theory. The Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn spent 11 years in prison and in exile, which animated much of his renowned literary works. And the American political prisoners Mumia Abu-Jamal and Leonard Peltier are currently themselves also published authors, with their writings collected and published during their jail time. So, some people in prison situations have been able to create works despite being in such circumstances. And as a result, some might consider prison time to be something of an opportunity, perhaps even a wellspring of redemption. The Encyclopedia Britannica reports that solitary confinement of criminals became an ideal among the rationalist reformers of the 18th century, who believed that solitude would help the offender to become penitent and that penitence would result in reformation. In the autobiography of Malcolm X, Alex Haley writes about the self-education program that Malcolm enacted while in prison. But there's plenty of evidence, both in history and in current times, to dispel the idea that jail or prison confinement time could be romantic. Jails and prisons tend to spawn situations of abuse and torture. Witness Iraq. Most Americans now know about the notorious prison scandals involving torture at the Iraqi prison named Abu Ghraib, made famous when a series of photographs were published by CBS News and the New Yorker magazine in 2004. What most Americans don't know is that prison abuse continues in 25 U.S.-run detention centers. Chicago journalist Lisa Croak reported on September 23, 2004, that a team of American legal investigators have discovered evidence of abuse, torture, and rape throughout the U.S.-run prison system in Iraq. A Michigan legal team met with former detainees in Baghdad during an August fact-finding mission and gathered evidence supporting claims of prisoner abuse at locations like Al-Salhiya prison in Baghdad, the notorious prison in Abu Ghraib, and a prison at Camp Baqa, a coalition-built POW camp in the southern port city of Umm Qasr. What's worse, as Lisa Croak also noted, while many of the detention centers where abuses were believed to have taken place were established under Saddam Hussein, most appear to be facilities put to use as prisons during the U.S.-led occupation. But you don't have to go all the way to Iraq to see such horrors. Witness Chicago, and witness the case of former Chicago Police Commander John Burge. Burge was deposed on September 1, 2004, as part of a civil suit initiated by victims who were tortured while in police custody. As reported in a post on the Chicago Independent Media Center, Burge is accused of using torture, including beatings, suffocation, and electrical shocks, to extract false confessions, which became the basis of convictions. A 1990 report by the Office of Professional Standards, a police investigatory agency, confirmed that physical abuse in the Chicago Police Department during the late 1970s and 80s was systematic and included psychological techniques and planned torture. Two attorneys uncovered 108 such allegations against the former commander and his men, all of which occurred between August 1972 and September 1991. It is quite likely that State's Attorney Richard Devine and Mayor Richard M. Daley, Cook County State's Attorney from 1980 to 1989, were complicit in a widespread conspiracy to cover up these abuses, allowing their perpetrators to enjoy impunity until the statute of limitations had been exhausted. And there could be more prisons on the way, not just in Chicago, but across America. Witness the for-profit prison industry. A report by C.P. Pandia notes that Corrections Corporation of America, the largest private prison firm in the country, said severe overcrowding in the United States federal prison system is likely to help fatten the bottom line of corporate prison operators. Federal prisons are running at more than 130% of capacity, and that overflow could spill into the prisons industry. Since 1975, the lockup rate has climbed to 400 out of every 100,000 citizens, compared with 100 out of 100,000 in the 50 years prior. The majority of people incarcerated are male and between the ages of 18 and 24. With the overall population of this demographic increasing, the company assumes more people will be thrown into prison, also helping business. The company said the Bush administration's post-9/11 immigration policy of mass roundups and increased police pressure in urban areas over the last 4 years has led to higher incarceration rates. That, combined with the historic trend of increased incarceration, will likely promote increased use of private prisons in the United States. What's more, the national turn toward private prisons has been greatly helped by the Bush administration, which has reduced the construction of prisons in favor of contracting private companies and local governments. But people refuse to uncritically swallow the state of affairs regarding prisons and are organizing to try to change things. The scandals at Abu Ghraib pulled a loose thread which could undo an entire tapestry of torture connected to the war in Iraq. In Chicago and elsewhere, organizing efforts to change our prison system, and by extension the whole system of criminal jurisprudence, are underway. Enough is Enough is the name of an organizing campaign working to bring justice to Chicago prisoners. You can learn more about the campaign by calling them at 773-643-4078. Again, that's 773-643-4078. Or you can email them at enoughisenoughcampaign@yahoo.com. Another resource which documents prison torture instances is the website chicagotorture.net, a website which serves as an archive for instances of torture. Again, that's chicagotorture.net. It's easy to discount such efforts, but don't do that. No matter how small, a spark can grow into a wildfire and can help to lead the beginning of lasting change in our prison system, in our political system, and beyond. This concludes this Truth Track. You've been listening to the Ministry of Truth.
Autumn shade.